Was that original?
Yeah.
Andy, while you're, while we're eating, maybe you can start. So we're going to reconvene and have, Andy's going to present the Stangenwald building. Our brains eat it up.
Yeah. Brain work needs a lot of calories. We're officially reconvened.
How do you like the peppers? Okay.
So everybody.
What's learning?
Angie, you have the floor. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Alan, for getting the lights. Yeah.
All right. Sit on the board of trustees. The last one of the day. Still Angie. So this one is for the Stangenwald building at 119 Merchant Street in downtown Honolulu. Was built in 1901, so it's one of the oldest buildings downtown. And it was designed by architects Ripley and Dickey. And its style is an eclectic Renaissance Revival style with Italian ancient building. It's 6 stories and has a structural steel frame, concrete foundation, brick masonry walls, and terracotta and wrought iron details.
John, can we go to
a
photo over there?
This is a section that I randomly found on somebody's wall in the building that we had never seen before. And this is a HABS drawing from the 1980s of the building, so it has been documented by HABS. This is a rendering from 1900 before the building was built. And the building is very much like that. One second. But on this rendering, there was a 7th floor. There was a lot of discussion at the time of the design of the building, how tall it would be. And Dr. Stangenwald, who owned the land, had one requirement. Well, he had a couple of requirements that popped up. The one I'm talking about now is that it had to be taller than the next door Judd building, at least 1 story taller than the Judd building. So it ended up being 6, and the Judd is 4. So I thought that was interesting. It's kind of like that thing in all the big cities, right? Everybody wants the tallest building. Let's see. The building is 85 feet tall and has a 79-foot wide symmetrical street frontage that is divided into 5 bays. Let's go to the front of the building. The front of the building.
Oh, the front.
Yeah. Well, that's a photo from, I think, can you tell by the cars? I can't remember, 60s or 70s. 70s would probably, I guess, from the cars. Or it might be from
80s.
No, I think it's from the Abbs period, right?
Yeah, I think it might be from 80s. Okay, the next one is the building today. There we go. Like I said, 79 feet wide and divided into 5 bays and symmetrical. Only the Merchant Street facade is decorative, with the remaining 3 sides of the building being a simple brick, which is fairly typical of urban buildings because, you know, once everything gets built up, you only see the front. It originally had 3 entrances on the front. There was a major renovation in 78, I believe it was, that changed a lot of things. And now there's one central entrance where there always was an entrance, and all of the openings on the first floor, even though they're slightly different, are in the same position and the same scale, just they're windows instead of doors on the ends now. And the first floor is really the only floor that's had any changes to it on the side. Everything else on the front is original or missing that I'll talk about in a second. The second story features a double hung window separated by scrolling full height corbels with Tuscan capitals. Oops, there's the back.
Well, that or next to the one before it's
done. I think the one, the same front. But you can see how plain the back is, and it's, the brick has actually been covered in some sort of stucco and painted at some time in the past. I don't know. Okay, so here we are back in the front. The ground floor facade features engraved pricked piers with Tuscan capitals and granite bases, which is all, and they've been painted, so you can't tell it's granite anymore. The second story has the double hung windows, like I mentioned, with the Tuscan scrolling corbels in the middle there. The third floor features a small wrought iron balcony right at the center, and those large cartouches that sort of visually give it support. They're not actually supporting anything.
I have a question, I'm sorry, about the balcony. I noticed that the balcony was in disrepair. Is that going to be taken away like a lot of the other elements? I know there's some are missing that was going to fall apart or whatever. Are you planning to fix that?
We have a representative of the owner.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Mike Okamoto. I'm the property manager. So no, actually, what we've been looking at and working with Liz Janey, structural engineering, is maintaining that and keeping that there. That's a very important aspect to my client, the ownership's, I guess, general plan for the property is maintaining, keeping it, preserving. He's a big fan of historical properties. He owns it in San Francisco and in Hong Kong. So his general plan is find ways to preserve and maintain and improve.
Did you introduce yourself? I'm sorry.
I'm Mike Okamoto with Standard Management. We're the property manager for the Sangamon building. Private individual.
Is Ramsey still on it? Is Ramsey still on it?
No. So it was previously owned by AMB, and our client purchased it from them about a year ago.
So then your question is that you're going to restore it, is that correct? Or fix it up, or what?
Yeah, there's, in general, fix and maintain, keep it. In line with kind of existing design and appearance.
Thank you.
And since I mentioned San Francisco, in my research on the building, I came across something that was kind of interesting. The Call Building, which was the newspaper building in San Francisco, I think was a major influence on this building, because if you look at the old pictures of the Call Building, that's now, it doesn't look anything like it did when it was first built. A lot of these details that you see, the horizontal articulation and the mix of windows and all of that sort of thing are very similar to that. So I think Dickey was influenced by that building that was built, I think, 2 or 3 years before this one. So it was a very contemporary reference for him. So I talked about the balcony, so we got that question answered. And the sixth floor originally had a balcony that cantilevered 5 feet from the face of the building. And in the 1970s, that was removed along with some pediments that were located. You can see the outline of the pediment right here.
Yeah.
Those also stuck out about 2.5-3 feet. And those were removed at that time, probably because they were starting to degrade a little bit. Rather than restore it, they just took them off, which is unfortunate. There is still a balcony up there. We'll see a picture of it in a minute. You can just go through some of the photos. It's about maybe 3 feet wide, but the cantilevered part of it is missing, and it has been for a very long time. Oh, did I say 70s? I think that the balcony was taken off in the 50s.
Okay.
And there it is. That's what's left. And the picture, I think you know this French door right there. That's an original French door, and there are actually two of those left in the interior on the sixth floor as well.
And that's the top floor?
Yeah. There's the safe that's in the basement. That's original to the building.
Angie, who was the tenant and used the safe?
In the basement, who was the tenant that used the safe? I don't know, I'm sorry. There was a safe on every floor originally. And there's the one in the basement, and we think that there might still be one that's on the fourth floor, but we haven't had access to that, so I'm not sure. Do you know?
There is on the fourth floor.
There is on the fourth floor, for sure, okay. The lobby has been renovated quite extensively. Nothing in the lobby really is original. There was originally a stairway to the basement. In addition to the stairway, there was a ramp from the street that led to the basement so that people could glide their bikes in and out. They had basement bike parking. And also on the first floor are these columns and their capitals that are existing. There's a close-up of the column coming up. This is no particular style. This is an invention of Dickey, I think, with all of his egg and dart and scroll and all of that. But they're quite beautiful. And then there was this stairway. The stairway is also original. It has metal balusters and risers and marble and slate treads. And there's always been a skylight at the top of the stairwell. There's the metal risers and the slate treads. Okay, let me go into a little bit to the history now that we've seen the building. I do want to say that the building was built like they do buildings these days. It was built as a shell. The individual tenants who leased the space would fit out the interior. So the interiors have been changed numerous times over the years with the different tenants, and it was never, you know, meant to be a static space. So the features that I mentioned are pretty much what is left of the interior. So history. Okay, on the site that the Stangewald building stands, it was owned by Hugo Stangewald. He was a German doctor and a very prominent Hawaii photographer. And if you look him up, he was really the first photographer, and he photographed a lot of the Hawaiian monarchy at the time.
Should we turn the lights on, or are you following?
I think that's all.
Dr. Taylor, would you mind just catching the lights?
He was partnered with Dr. Jarrett Judd, who had the building next door built. They were actually cavalry surgeons for the Kingdom of Hawaii's military together, and then they went into practice on both lots, both the Judd lot and the Stangewald lot. They had two, they called them wood frame houses, but they were actually their business. One was the medical facility, and the other was like a pharmacy sundry type store, because they sold all kinds of stuff. In 1899, Dr. Stangewald leased the property to a hui of lawyers who wanted to build a professional building. The lease agreement stated that the building would be at least 5 stories tall, so it would be taller than the Judd building, like I mentioned, have the same construction quality as the Judd building, and that it would be named after Stangewald himself. And even though he died that same year, in 1899, the lease terms were upheld, except one thing that Dr. Stangewald had asked. He had asked that his name be emblazoned across the front of the building, and that never happened. But it has retained his name all this time, which is something. And I mentioned that Ripley and Dickey were the architects. Dickey was very, very early in his career at this point. I mean, this was not his first job, but close to his first job. And we're all familiar with him, so I'm not going to go into his background. Ripley is somewhat lesser known, but also very influential, both for residential and commercial architecture in Hawaii. And you know, this building in particular, and most of the buildings that the two of them did together, Ripley was considered the technical innovator, and Dickey was the aesthetic design architect. And that's the way they kind of split up the project. The building is also it was the epicenter for a lot of things that went on here in Hawaii. Historical figures and companies associated with the building include Lauren Thurston, who owned the newspaper and was a translationist. He was also, I didn't know this, because if you read about him, he sounds like that. He was also the instigator of Volcano National Park. Without him, that probably wouldn't exist, because he was very influential in getting that to happen. Other people were named to be Castle and Cook had their offices in the building. Alfred Parker, who owned Parker Ranch, houses in the building, and they were all these guys were also a part of this attorney Huey that had the building built. So, significance. The building is, maintains its integrity, even though it's had some of its pieces locked off over time. And it's significant under criterion A and C. Under criterion A, it's for its association with early commercial development in Honolulu. It was considered Hawaii's first skyscraper and was the tallest, this is kind of crazy, it was the tallest office building in the Hawaiian territory until the 1950s. Now, you can't count Aloha Tower because it's a tower, it's not a building, but actual inhabited buildings, it was the tallest building until the 50s. It was also considered Honolulu's first fireproof building, which is especially significant at the time because of the Chinatown fires that had happened just a few years before the building was built, and those fires came within two or three blocks of the building, so being fireproof was very important at the time. And I already mentioned all the people, so I don't need to do that again. And under criterion C, it's eligible as an architecturally significant Italianate Renaissance Revival style building designed and built near the beginning of Hawaii's territorial history. And it was designed by a firm of Ripley and Digby. I already went through their things. And one thing I do want to note is it's not eligible under B for Dr. Stanchewell, because even though he was instrumental in it happening, none of his career happened in the building he died before it was even built. So it's eligible, I think, right here in A and C. And that is it.
Good. I have a question.
Sure.
Are those flag poles used in the building?
Currently, no. If there was a way to, I think our client would like to, but it's kind of an access issue as it. You have to climb out a window within a tenant space to lower and put up the flag and everything, so kind of a logistical challenge.
Well, the reason I mentioned it is that facade and also the other building on the other side on Bishop Street, they remind me of New York buildings with the flags out. That's what they remind me of, and by the having the flags out, it sort of gives that, adds more enhancement to the building of its character. Are you having plans to put that into use or not?
We are investigating it as our client would like to. So just making sure to be compliant and then kind of figuring out the logistics as well. So if we were to illuminate the flag so we can have that criteria covered of not having to lower it necessarily at night. But yeah, it's definitely under review and investigation.
Thank you.
You said you are doing renovations, but since we're talking about the investment tax credit before, is this going to be what they call a substantial rehab?
I wouldn't necessarily consider it that. It's really just getting the items that are, or maybe deferred maintenance back into good work.
So you're not going in and recapturing the original lobby or any of that stuff?
No.
We don't even know what
the
lobby was now.
Based on the sections that I found, the original lobby was quite small. It was a very narrow space because they were trying to maximize the leasable area.
You said there were three doors into the ground floor, though, right?
Mm-hmm, there were. So the middle door was primarily access to the basement, the ramp, and the elevator and the stairs, whereas now it's the primary access to
the tenants. The other doors entered onto commercial spaces?
Correct.
There is a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I could add, yes. The owner, probably the one before A and B, was Ramsey. She was one along with Nancy Bannock and all the others that say part of Chinatown and other buildings in Chinatown. Mm-hmm. And this is when she took me into the Stanley Woman, the most important feature, which you didn't really suggest here, was the elevator. It was a tremendous accomplishment that they put the elevator in. And I think that you need to include that again.
Just it's not the same elevator.
Yeah, I think
anymore.
It might have been, unfortunately.
Yeah, the elevator's been replaced. And
maybe recently then, I don't know.
Yeah, the elevator has been replaced, and it's not the first elevator. The Judd building next door had the first elevator.
No, I didn't say it was the first. I just meant it was a very exception.
Yeah, if you look at that section again, and I think you had seen it, right? When it had the girl that slid back and forth. I mean, it was there. What year was that?
How dare you ask?
I can't remember. It was very old.
You were like a teenager, right?
I was a teenager who worked in the building because the Star Bulletin had their headquarters in there. And the building, it's generally about the same, except the down floor and all that area was changed. But the elevator was very ancient. I remember it very old.
And in the nomination, I didn't mention it here, though. In the nomination, I talked about how the elevator was the fastest one, and everybody was amazed about how fast it could get to the sixth floor. But fast then and fast now are two different things.
Was there an operator? Did they have an elevator operator?
I never saw any mention of an operator. Yeah, I would, usually there were back in those days, but I never saw any mention.
But a lot of the ones, like in French residences, are cage elevators, but you operate it yourself.
Yeah.
One thing the nomination mentioned was the built on leased land, which I thought was interesting, and
yes,
with an option to buy in 20 years, something like that. But he passed away right away, and they exercised the option. Was that a pretty common arrangement? Do you have any idea?
I couldn't find any real details on that. He did initially lease it to them, and I think the 20-year period you mentioned was correct. But then because he died, I think maybe there was a clause in the lease that said upon his death they could buy it. That's what I'm assuming. I didn't find that specifically. Because they didn't waste any time. They went right ahead with the construction upon his death.
Anyone else wish to ask Angie or, I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Mike.
Mike, any questions? No? How about a motion on the floor then? Anybody want to go ahead? It's Saikaika's turn.
I make a motion to nominate the Stangenwald building on the criteria A and C on the local and state level with recommendation to 4 to the national level.
Second. Okay, Katie seconds. Any more discussion?
Comments? I was disappointed how little there is on the inside still.
Yeah. Well, it's never meant to be, you know, a lot of detail on the inside, so.
And I was disappointed that we lost the balcony.
Yeah, I know, that one hurts.
Like those columns that present themselves on the ground floor, mm-hmm. is there a continuation of structural columns that move up the building? And I mean, we saw Glenn Mason's office, but, you know.
Yeah, there are. They're all pretty much within the walls.
Were they just square?
Yeah, they're not decorative at all. Okay. They're within the walls. You can see them on the section.
Okay. Because that wouldn't have changed.
Right. Still have to work around those.
Yeah.
I have a question. Are you planning to, I noticed that some of the elements like the part on the window that was taken out, do you have plans to put it back or anything like that? Because it's very pronounced, that roof.
The missing pediments over the windows on the fourth floor.
Yeah, I kind of in line with our client's overall goal for that is return to condition or find something suitable that, you know, resolves the issue but still keeps the character of the building.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad
anybody else have any questions or comments?
I did like the fact that on the fifth floor when we visited, the windows are obviously the original glass, mm-hmm. the waviness and everything in there. It shows.
Any interior doors within the building that might be original?
Only the ones on the sixth floor that I mentioned, the French doors, those are the only ones.
But no interior doors that are old enough to be?
I think they were all pretty much replaced in the 1978 renovation. All the, you know, the ones that are off the lobbies. Because every single floor is the same now. And I don't think it would have been necessarily been that way in the past.
Interesting. So none of the tenants There's like no tenant improvement. It was like from the original tenant, like.
Just those two little rooms up in the corner of the sixth floor.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, because I've been in a lot of them. And if you look at the plan, not the plans, but the plans from the 78, all the floors were gutted.
Okay, interesting, yes.
I mean, even the lobby area.
That would have done it.
You had the the column of the stairs, and then everything else was gutted.
This was gutted. Who owned it at that time when that was gutted? Do you know who the owner was at that time?
Right.
Was that Ramsey?
I think Ramsey
was.
She
doing that?
I think she got it.
Gut?
Maybe it was the person after. Maybe it was the owner after then, her then.
It might have been A&B, but that would have been quite a bit later.
Yeah, I have the architect who did it, but I don't think I have the owner.
And James Tsugawa, I said, was the architect.
But I don't know who the owner was. Huh. It's something we can pick up.
Yes, Bill.
I'm very curious because I know that some of the older buildings downtown has water in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And with ocean levels rising, of course there's no climate problem, but the ocean levels are rising, and I'm just kind of curious, does the building have any kind of basement kind of thing with water in it?
Yeah, so there's
did you read the nomination?
You know what I mean?
I did somewhere in there.
Yeah, so we are, I guess, below the water table, I guess, as you call it. So we do have actually two sump pumps that are specifically for that we maintain through Duwood Engineering. It's part of our security check daily, actually. And then especially during like heavy rains and everything, that's what I'm stressing out about. What if we have a catastrophic power loss and then our generator can't go longer than it takes to restore power. But yeah, those are part of that. It's part of the preventative maintenance plan that's in place. Our engineering checks it, third-party vendor maintains it, and security actually checks it as well daily.
But also in my research, I found old articles from when the building was being built talking about the innovative sump system, because it did have a basement. It was so close to the harbor. And there were two or three articles that talked about the system. They didn't really describe it. They just said it was this innovative system. And the big mass of it is still there, and it's capped. But even back then, they were thinking about that. And there were other articles that mentioned, oh, this building such and such, its basement is flooding with water. It should have done what the Stangenwald building did. You know, so there were a lot of references like that. So they took that into account at the time, and it apparently worked very well.
So is it pronounced Stangenwald and not Stangenwald? Because it's like I've heard it pronounced.
I've heard it both.
I always thought it was Stangenwald.
So that's interesting. I got 50-50 here on the
It's German. Don't forget.
I call it Stangenwald.
You say Stangenwald. I'm just curious.
So I'm the odd man out. I'll tell
you. No. Several
it's like
of
people. It's like Eisenberg and Eisenberg, right?
Yeah.
Eisenberg is correct.
Eisenberg is correct, but it's actually the German.
So
only. It's not exactly Eisenberg. It's sort of like Eisenberg.
Thank you, Bill. We're obviously off on a tangent, so let's refocus. We have a motion, a second. And I think we've had lots of conversations and everybody's been able to speak, so why don't we call for the question, which was nominate, the motion was made by
Ikaika.
So it's all in favor of the motion as made by Ikaika.
Who seconded it?
And seconded by Katie. Please raise your hand.
All right.
And it looks like every hand is up, so it looks like we have a unanimous vote.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so now we move on to the Ronald Kamehameha Okahai Von Holt residence, Veli Veli Bay.
Museum, oh, that's awesome.
remember it went to a party a lot. She hired the Royal Army guys.
So here we go. This is our last nomination for the day, I believe. So last, not least.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for hearing us today. Laura, I'm Mono. This is my sister Rachel. We are descendants of our grandfather, Ronald.
Might need to speak just a little louder.
Yep. His middle name was given to him because he was the last Kamehameha Okahai. Hawaii means the last son of the flag, Okahai. He was the last person born in Hawaii while it was a kingdom at the time. He was a rancher from North Kohala on the Big Island. And there he is. And a lot of the ranches on the Big Island had beaches that they would go and they would use. And a lot of the beach houses that they had are gone no longer. He decided to build this one out of rock because there was no road access, and any building materials you could use that were already there were handy.
So this is a 2.7 acre parcel. It's on the Kona coast of Hawaii. It's surrounded by lava. It's off the grid. There are four contributing buildings, one non-contributing. And as you can see, we've got three interconnected angling fish ponds.
Here.
The four contributing buildings are the main house you see there on the left. Just to the right is one of the water storage tanks. There's also a sleeping house and a secondary water storage tank. This is the main house from the ocean. The buildings were designed by architect Albert L.I. Ives. This is the back side of the main house, overlooks the center fish pond. The property was purchased in 1936. Buildings were completed in 1938. South side of the main house, you can see the freshwater freshwater tank there that we use for catchment and then feed it into the main house. This is the backside of the sleeping house. And here you can see the right one is the sleeping house, which is contributing original. The left one is a storage building that we built recently and tried to mimic the architecture of the original buildings.
Is that white stripe paint? Or is that
coral? No, it's coral rock. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
It is.
So Veli Veli was built to withstand the test of time. Basically, besides general maintenance and upkeep, it is on the ocean, so we do have to replace screens and keep it up. And we did put in an electrical solar system. But other than that, the property remains as it did in the 30s. So we see it historical as a 1930s beach home.
Is that a halepili there you have?
It's Lahala. And the thatching process was taught to us by a Hawaiian caretaker that we have, and it was a process that wasn't common. It was so uncommon that during one of the re-thatchings, someone from the Bishop Museum came down to take pictures of the process.
So it's a holly la holla.
Yeah, I just 2 years ago, I just re-thatched both pitches of the roof because the string that lashed the lahala leaves to the wooden dowels inside had failed in the sun, and trade winds get really strong there, so all the lahala had blown away. So it's an interesting process to redo. Be very careful. I collected all the lahala, but inside the leaves there was little craft spider pods. And I was afraid to introduce them to our environment, so I had to
creative.
What do you use them for?
I had bundles of the La Hala in the back of a truck, and then I tarped it. I bought a few cans of the indoor fogger, bomb stuff, and I just left it out halfway off the road for 2 days.
Use it? Do you use it for storage, or can you go in there?
Well, that's the best pond to swim in.
Uh-huh.
So we have a little shower. And
okay.
In the old days, you can't see it in this photo, but there's a original building to hold water, same construction with the black lava and then the white coral. And we would pump the water from the brackish ponds up into that, and then we could gravity feed it into the kitchen sinks. We had cold brackish water and into that shower.
Okay.
Okay. More photos?
No, that's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, here you don't show any interior photos, huh, in this slide presentation?
I did not.
Because I was there, I did get to go there, and I have a lot of interior photos in my little baby album here.
Yeah.
Which, including the, if anybody, I've sort of been passing it up and down, but.
There's something in the nomination form.
Yeah. Just in case, so. The banding of the, it's such an interesting mix because on the beach, you have the coral that's been thrown up by the storms, and then you have the lava that's been coming down,
right?
And you have this sort of black and white thing, and then you just pick up those materials and the sophistication banding of the lava with the coral. It's just so harmonious with the natural environment there.
Yeah.
Not seen it any other
place. I know, it's just extraordinarily sophisticated use of materials. But Albert Ely Ives, is it Ely Ives or is Don still there?
No.
Is it Albert Ely Ives or
Ely?
Yes.
Is it? I think it's Ely.
Ely, right?
It's Ely, but
Ely.
I think it's pronounced.
I don't know how you pronounce
Ely.
It.
I think it's Albert Ely Ives. Is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
Quite an amazing architect.
Question: do you have more information about the ponds itself? So there's different types of Hawaiian fish ponds. Yeah. Is there more information on that? And where was the Makaha before it was destroyed by the tsunami?
The Makaha was on the northern end of the property. And I don't know if there's a photo that
presents
that. Yeah. It would be just, you can't really see it from here, but it's where the pond gets closest to the ocean. And I've seen with high water and high surf, you can see water running into the pond through the rocks. It's very porous. My grandfather's plan was to raise mullet. So there's actually four ponds. There's a little one in between. They all have narrow waterways where there were gates, but they were wood and they rotted away.
Right.
So I've slowly been building up the perimeters of the walls because the girth of the coconut trees expand and then push the rocks in, so we put it all back.
All right, okay, so the alkaline ponds were walled, or are they natural alkaline brackish water ponds?
They're natural ponds,
okay.
But they've been enhanced because there was so much pushed down into it, so the sides have been built up, dry stack style, no concrete.
Right.
There's enough fresh water coming in from a spring on the south Mauka corner that supports fish like koi, so we put koi in there. Mm-hmm. I myself have been restocking the ponds with native fish that I captured. I just go in the tide pools at night and scoop them with nets and reintroduce them back into the pond.
Has there been any archaeological study prior to the restoration by your grandfather?
Not
because
that I
in the
know.
Document, not that we're aware of.
No.
We don't have any prior knowledge.
No.
I think what should be added into the document is the drawing of where approximately where the Makaha was located, yeah, because it's stated in the documents. Because part of the, in this document states that the cultural affiliation is with Hawaii, I would have liked to see more information on that. Yeah, so what type of loko'ia, what type of fish pond is this? Where was the makaha located? And you can do that easy by sketching where exactly,
sure,
how it enters into the pond nearest to the, yep, ocean. Yeah. And even, especially with, because I know with your grandfather being connected with Kapua ranching, and as well as Panalolo ranching, because they were, that parcel of land was split into two ranches.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so with that, even with that ranch, it has stated a genealogy of the land, how they got the land and how they came to currently right now to the people working on it. I would like to have to see it in this document as well. How did they purchase that land and where did that land come from? Who was that land in from? Yeah. So just kind of just similar historical information to add into this document, just like how your grandfather had managed the ranch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even more of a written significant statement about your grandfather, because he's honored on the ranch, he's honored on that plaque on Highway 250.
Yeah, right outside of the entrance, yeah, of Kahoa Avenue.
Yeah, and you know, that would be great to put more of his story inside of this stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's wonderful to look at, and with the photos that you have presented and the photos that our chairwoman had produced, you know, yes, the photos can tell a lot of it, but because we are trying to get this through the document and for MPS to see it, I wanted to see that document fully filled with that written history about your grandfather as well as the property.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I think this, I didn't get to go to this property, but I think this looks like an amazing property.
We all want to go, definitely.
But I think you need to add more information to this, more description, a detailed description about each structure and how it sits on the site. Maybe more information about the architect a little bit, you know, other than just two buildings that he did, but something about, you know, how did he end up designing this or what's his relationship to the site.
A lot of this information we don't have any,
yeah,
longer.
You, yeah,
know, it's just what's been told, what my, right, mother remembers. You,
right,
know.
And any of that you could find out in that regards. I mean, you could probably find information about him as an architect.
Right.
He did.
Right.
You know, and definitely adding more information about the father. But I think especially the description of the property,
okay,
needs to describe it more in detail. I mean, it doesn't have to be 160 pages like some of the honoka. All of the honoka. But it's, there's so many different aspects to the site that you want to be able to describe it so that somebody not seeing the pictures could almost picture it.
Okay.
Or know a little bit more about the more details of the construction. You know, this building has a wood roof, it has these type of windows. And, you know.
Well, that's the thing about that place, is it's impossible to describe it. Even with photos,
yeah,
you have to be there to feel it. And as some of us in the room know,
okay, you convinced us we're going. But this is a record of this place. I mean, hopefully this is always there, but someday it's probably not there. And for somebody to be able to read this and understand more about that property is important.
Yeah,
and
okay,
it surely
thank
deserves
you.
A recognition to be nominated. Yeah. But like with Katie, it's just we need to have it on record, yeah. Especially it does fit in the criteria that it's trying to be listed on top.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
To follow up on that, online, if you go into the State Historic Preservation Division, all of these nominations that you've been hearing today. Are there, and if you look at a couple of the other houses, those nominations, you'll get a better sense of the form and what's expected. Because although I was privileged to be there, and we did dally because it was such a fabulous thing, There are things that you can say, you know, just Matt's question about, is it white paint or is it coral? What, how are the walls constructed? Is, you know, what is the floor made of? The curve, the style of the kitchen on the end of the main structure. I also wanted to ask you the number of resources. You show four contributing. What are the four?
The main two house, houses. The sleeping house and then the two water storage tanks.
Okay. The Lono mentioned to us that the holly has been there as long as you can remember.
It has. It has been rebuilt. It has been redone. So I wasn't sure if that would
contribute
or not, or even.
Was it rebuilt using the same materials, like with the structure, the timber frames, or was it refurbished?
We don't know what the framing was initially, but it's 2x4 framing and 1-inch wooden dowels, as long as we can remember. As far as the Lahala, yes, that's original.
And the thatching, I mean, what you told us then and today, it would be really helpful to include. I would suggest that is worthy of inclusion, as is the dry stack wall. Really, when you see an aerial of it, that's just, you know, it's like the Great Wall of China. You know, it's like there. So, like I say, I'd recommend that you look at some of the other nominations to see the style of what people are asking, and those were all done by professionals.
Right.
So
we are not.
Yeah. Right. So this isn't a criticism per se, but once it goes to the keeper of the records, that person won't have had the privilege of going. So what's in here is going to be really important to determine the exceptional qualities and the integrity of the site.
Okay.
Especially with the story about, you know, these directors having beach houses on the corner coast. Yeah, and now only having your family's beach house for the only one in existence along the upper corner at Kauai High.
There's a couple more.
Add that into the documents.
Okay.
I think there's a couple more though, so, yeah. I mean there are, it's not the last one. There's
original or?
Well, there's a couple more, yeah. I believe so.
One of the few we made.
Question.
What I also think would be, I mean, I first came to the property in like the early 1980s, or might have even been the late 70s, and I came in by foot on the coastline with one of your relatives. And what I think is really interesting to say about this property is that you came in by boat. Wasn't that the dominant?
I remember that's how we got
there. This sort of road that I captured in these sequence of photos. I mean, I don't believe this existed.
No, it did not.
And so I mean, I think that's really critical. I'm not sure you mentioned that the primary access through the period up until whenever this took your D9 down there was either by foot or it was by boat. And that was a significant piece of information that, you know, everything had to be.
Not just going there to enjoy it, but to build it.
Well, and just to hang out there. I mean, you had to have all your own food, and I mean, other than fish, and I suppose you caught lobster out in the, you know, I mean, you would fish and do stuff like that, but that a lot of your stuff that you brought in, you had to bring it in by those techniques that, you know, was you had to plan ahead.
And you forget something. You're stuck.
You forgot something. Anyway, yes, Al.
Yeah. I was going to mention that I think part of what we were talking about in terms of how all the materials were brought in and how much effort that took. And I think it would really help if you had some interior shots of the main house, because one of the things that struck me being there is how open it is. And you don't get that from the outside. Right. You can only get that from the inside. But it's basically one huge room with open air windows on all four sides, so the complete air ventilation. This is a house designed before utilities.
Right.
And it's designed to be livable in any weather.
Absolutely.
And I think that's an essential feature, and you only capture that from the inside. You can't capture it from the outside. So I really would suggest you add some interior shots to capture that notion, because that open space in that main house is just amazing to me. especially when you consider everything had to be brought in and those trusses and everything, the materials for that, that bigger space was an amazing design. But I would, again, you only capture that when you're inside the building. You don't get it from the outside.
Right.
Right.
Those big openings also help the ocean come through, which happened in 46 and 60 with the tsunamis. I've been down there with big swells coinciding with super high tides, and I've gone and opened all the windows, because when the waves come over the seawall, they push the rock. And with every next wave, the rock starts stacking up, and you got to let it in the house, otherwise it's going to pile up and blow out the windows.
Yeah. See, those are the types of assets, I think, the genius of the design. It really doesn't get captured unless you document it.
Yeah.
And so we need more documentation to capture just how unique this feature is.
Yeah.
We can do that.
You know, having grown up in the state and having experienced all our weather and emergencies, it's like, I look at that and I say, this is a really self-sufficient property. And that's kind of amazing in this day and age. So I'd like to see a lot of that documented in the nomination form, so we have that preserved.
Concur. And it'll be a gift for historians in the future, and you know, it'll be a public record of how this was done and how it fits into Hawaii, a time period and place. So you really have an opportunity to gift the future with it.
Kids.
Yeah.
How reliable is the access by sea? Are you guys fear a north swell or a south swell? What's the
South swells won't get in there. Okay. So that's the reason why when I went by boat, we never really went in the wintertime. We just mostly go in the summertime. Got all kinds of stories about how there's a typhoon in July and the surf comes up and how the family has to get out of there. Nowadays, we have surf forecasting websites. They're pretty accurate. It's easy for us to know. But in the old days, they didn't have that. So as far as narrowing down your answer, getting there by boat is pretty easy with today's forecasting.
Is there a Cobble Beach? Or I couldn't quite see from the photo.
Ely.
Yeah.
Or big ones. Yeah. We've got some, and we should maybe add some photos.
Yeah.
We have a natural rock outcropping that breaks down the surf before it comes to the beach, so it's a smaller wave when it hits the beach, and that's helped us maintain it. And there's a kind of a natural boat channel, so you can come to shore with the boat at high tide, low tide, you definitely get out and push.
I think it's also interesting because Albert Ely Ives was just this amazing architect, and he had that paper I gave you with all the history of Ives.
Yeah.
You could see that within a couple of years of his moving here from the East Coast, he was doing this house.
Right.
And so somebody connected with him. Well, he was married to Keenan Wilder, but
found him as soon as
somewhere he connected
there
with your family.
Yeah.
In this period, and within a year, couple of years, he was down there doing this,
right,
this project. I'm sorry there aren't more photos or something about documenting like how that relationship was made between your grandfather,
right,
and Albert Ely Ives.
Right,
but
we've become curious of how it's all came together.
Yeah, it's just wonderful if you could ever dig that up, but perhaps not. Perhaps it's lost to history. But I'd
like to see what else he did in Hawaii during that time.
That's on that paper I gave you.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent.
So, anyway, Alan, are you saying anything? Oh, I thought you were waving your arm. Oh, you're just scratching your ear. Okay. Sorry.
I have nothing to contribute.
Oh, yeah. Saw your hand going like this. Okay. So, any more comments or questions? Anybody? It's sounding like we're wanting you to have more. I'm getting consensus somewhat here. We want you to do a little bit more research and a little bit more documentation. And you live in Colorado. You came all the way from Colorado to be here today, so thank you for that. But I have a brother nearby, a Big Island.
Happy to be back on the Big Island.
Yeah.
Being close to Delaware Valley is part of the reason why I moved there.
Yeah, don't blame you. When did that road go in, that, whatever that?
They built the lower highway in 1976.
But I mean the one, the denied one?
Yeah, so we did it at about the same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So 76?
76 or 77.
Have you found over a period of time that you're having to maintain that? Or it's not even your land, is it? I mean, who owns that land on that?
It's state.
State.
Yeah, and as far as maintaining the road, it just gets better the more we drive on it.
Just keeps crushing.
It's so porous, it just breaks.
Keeps crushing it down. Yeah. Okay. All right.
On the ocean end, however, because of the surf, you know, the surf will push rock up, and we'll have to get it to where we can drive across it again. Remember how we drove up to the house?
Close.
Yeah.
Close. You don't want a car too getting in there too far.
Yeah, yeah, getting around.
Kind of ruins the picture. Anyway, and I would, I mean, should we defer this till it be more updates? I would recommend if anybody wants to go see the site, you should definitely be in contact with Lono. I'm sure he would love to give you a tour.
I would.
And it's really a very powerfully beautiful, unique, well-maintained, and very, very historic site. And so maybe some of our other board members might be wanting to go out just to experience it.
No,
because
problem.
You can't really, photos don't begin.
Like I said, until I'm blue in the face, I'll try and describe it to you. You won't get it. You have to come out and see it.
Yeah, so that's an invitation, I believe. Anyway, so I think we'll call for a motion now. Unless anybody in the audience has anything to say, no? No? Okay. So how about a nomination from someone?
So would we nominate it with the idea that they would update it, working with staff, or?
Well, I think it sounds more like a deferral. When you want to? Okay.
I move that the board defer the nomination of Ronald Kamehameha of Kauai, Hawaii, on Holt Residence until more information and details about the property are brought to us.
I second that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. And anybody want to say anything more before I call for the question? Okay. All in favor of the motion, please raise your hands. I see everybody's hands up, so that's just a deferral. So we'll see you back in the near future.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Thank you
place.
So much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lovely. Okay. And that was our last nomination for today. So I think we have a few more things to discuss. We have some minutes to approve of a couple of board meetings prior. And I think a report from Dr. Downer. Which should we do first? Should we do the minutes or your report? I don't, it doesn't matter.
His report.
Do your report, okay.
All right, so we'll start with the federal budget process. Of course, as you're all aware, there's other chaos in DC, and that's probably not going to change. However, the Interior Department budget does have, at least as proposed right now, a substantial increase in funding for the Historic Preservation Fund. Unfortunately, none of that will come to the SHPOs, but there are some grant programs, say the Treasures in particular, that will see significant increases in funding. On the state side, this is we're almost to the two-thirds mark in the legislative session, and you know this is always my most hectic time of year, and this has been much more frantic than most, and I think in part that's because at the beginning of the session. The legislature decided that they would reinvent the budget process. And so we didn't always get results that we liked out of the budget process, but we could always look at a document and know where we were in the process. And this, as I say, we're two-thirds of the way through the session, and the budget is just starting to emerge. it looks like Shifty is going to do okay. It looks like our base budget is going to have a small increase. You know, I say small, and that's speaking in terms of a government agency. It looks to be about $370,000 increase for us. You know, part of that increase is something that it's a line item that's identified as proof of concept.
What is that?
You know exactly what I know.
Well, what
maybe
was
the,
could you spell
it?
Out?
The, is it